I'd never seen the house look so shameless. Gold-painted papyrus leaves crested from the vases. Scarab brooches gleamed on silk lapels. At the end of the hallway, a rented sphinx judged every mispronunciation of Tutankhamun. My aunt would have called it gauche. I called it an alibi. An excuse to hide 1,000 restless thoughts in a sea of thematic opulence. The quartet in the music room had abandoned Debussy an hour ago for loose jazz as the saxophone thread followed me like blue cigarette smoke. Loud laughter and the jingle of a woman's anklet moved across the parquet as my sequin dress caught the lamplight. Curses, tombs. To me, the only curse here was boredom. Then he arrived. The term fashionably late was minted and coined as Farid stepped inside. He wore a dark suit, a coat slung over one shoulder, and a single blue scarab at his lapel. He was tan and had a few years on me, but was certainly not what I would consider old. His eyes squinted as they adjusted to the electric light inside the house. "My hostess," he said, his voice a low hum. "Thank you for having me." For a moment, I was unable to speak. Was it like this when the tomb was opened? A crush of bodies, everyone talking too loudly? I asked as my voice returned. He glanced past me at faux Cleopatra wigs and painted coal, then back to me. It was very quiet, actually. Dust settling, breath held a bit too long. Then someone bumped a lantern and the gold answered back from the walls.
The gold answered back?
It does when you wake it. The words sat between us. Something had been awoken in me. I laughed. "You'll have to tell that story to the whole room later. They'll devour you." "I'd rather tell it to someone who savors," he said lightly. "Careful," I murmured. "You'll make me think you meant me." I did. The quartet slipped into something sultrier. A guest knocked over a plaster canopic jar and muttered an apology to no one in particular. Farid didn't seem to notice. "What's Egypt like?" I asked plainly. "It smells of stone," he said, "and resin, palm sap, and the river at night. There's a dry sweetness that the day scorches away in sunlight." I smiled before I could stop myself. "I like the way you speak about it."
"Do you?"
"Yes." He already had me when he said he preferred someone who savored. I had myself to blame for the rest. We drifted away from the heat between us under the pretext of showing him the Egyptian parlor that was my late father's pride. Lotus stencils covered the walls, bronze lamps threw false desert light. A divan sagged under cushions and a glass case of cultural replicas lined the back of the room. I closed the pocket doors and the music outside fell to a murmur. My heartbeat replaced it. "Do you mind?" I asked. "Sometimes I like to hear myself think."
"I don't mind," Farid said.
He touched the glass over a faience amulet with the gentleness of someone who had touched the real thing. "Your party is quite beautiful." "You don't seem to like it very much, though," he added, after a short pause.
"Don't I?"
I lifted my head. "Or do you just possess excellent instincts?" "I don't know how refined my instincts are," he said. "I only know that once I open a door, I walk through." "Tell me about the lantern, the gold answering back," I hurriedly asked. He described air sealed away for centuries, the first crack of light, the smell of time exhaling, a heartbeat where everything was pure and untouched. He said he knew, in that breath, that a part of him would stay down there forever. You talk as if you fell in love, I said. I did, in a way, he looked at me. Tell me how you curated this lovely gathering. I had to choose a dress, a band, a caterer who'd forgive me if someone danced on a table and broke it, I said with a small laugh. Have you chosen anything for yourself? He asked softly. I didn't answer him. Instead, I found my hand resting on his lapel of its own volition. I could feel the steady thrum of his heart beneath my fingertips. Fareed, I said, letting my tongue taste his name. Yes? Remind me, when are you leaving? Tomorrow, he said, just after dawn. And you came to a party? I came because you asked, he said simply. It happened the way a storm breaks when the air has been heavy for hours. I can't remember who moved first. It didn't matter. My back found the silk on the wall. His hand found the small of my waist. He kissed me with certainty, and I willingly fell into the space he cleared for it. His mouth tasted of mist and sweet smoke and something darker. A tea, perhaps, left cooling while you studied a photograph or read a book you couldn't put down. Everything narrowed to basic sensation. The rasp of his jaw when I tipped my face for more. The tiny catch of sequins against the wool accents of his clothing. I let out a sigh I hadn't realized I'd been holding back for months. He continued to kiss me with measured breaths, a longing he too seemed surprised to find. I pressed my body into his hands. Time began to lose meaning as the jazz and cocktail chatter of the party faded into nothingness. Tell me to stop, he said, against my mouth. I won't, I said with absolute certainty. We almost didn't make it to the divan. I felt the cushions yield beneath my knees and the heat of him beneath my palms. He traced the line of my throat with his mouth, the hollow where a pendant of a necklace might have sat. I molded my mouth around his kiss and felt everything I had ever been ashamed of dissipate under the sweetness of his tongue. I slid my hands under his jacket, over his shoulders, and down the sleeves as I memorized the oblique lines of his arms. I unbuttoned his shirt with fingers that had opened hundreds of other things, cards, doors, confusion and emotion. Never anything like this. He unspooled the beads from my neck and gracefully set them on the table next to us, as if they belonged in a display case. Someone might come looking for me, I whispered, nervousness creeping back into my voice. Then they'll look, he said, and they won't find what you've kept for yourself. In here, no one will come except you and me. Yes. My one-word answer fit as perfectly in the moment as my breasts did in his hands. He took off my stockings first with slow and practiced hands. He found the clasp of my garter with his fingertips and looked into my eyes from where he knelt as he freed it. I gave a quick nod of approval before he slid the silk down my trembling thigh. When he did the same to the other leg, my skin burned across each inch where his fingers had just been. Yes. I want to see you, he said with a low, patient tone. Then look, I told him, slipping out of the shimmering sequins of my dress. The fringe tickled his knuckles as he took it from me to lay out. The noise of the party was barely audible, faint and far away beneath the door. In this room, there was only breath and the sound of our names in each other's mouths. He mouthed the inside of my knee, calmly moving over me the way moonlight shimmers over water. His lips climbed higher and higher until they found the place that, up until that moment, I'd thought of exclusively as mine. My hands went to his hair as if the action was something they'd done a thousand times before. He was tender and wicked all at once. When his tongue circled my clit, unhurried and deliberate, my throat opened. The sound that left me could have been laughter, could have been a sob, could have been both. He took it as motivation and gave me more. "I like the way you move," he said, his voice roughened by me, surprised yet eager. "I am," I breathed. He slid two fingers inside, curling until he found the place that made the divan creak and my hips rise on their own. His rhythm was a language I'd never spoken, but my body responded immediately and fluently. My bare breasts were piqued by the lightning in the air and the feeling of his touch inside me. He looked up at me as his fingers worked, his mouth back on my clit, eyes dark and focused.
Fareed.
He wasn't greedy, Fareed, but hungry. As he expertly encouraged the explosion of fire within me, I let go. His name burned in my mouth as the world stopped short of everything but he and I. My body clenched around him. I shuddered, radiant and fierce. He held me through it, mouth softening, fingers easing. When it became too much, he pressed gently until each small aftershock broke loose and made me laugh with breathless audacity. He kissed the inside of my thigh once more before reaching up to cradle my face in his hands. I used mine to tell him it was his turn to be unmade. I undid the last buttons as he shrugged free of his shirt. I palmed him through his trousers and felt the hard insistence of his manly desire. The way he throbbed under my touch was far more intoxicating than the champagne that was still flowing behind our closed doors. We managed his belt together, and then my hand wrapped around him, hot and satin slick, as he groaned against my mouth. "Let me," I said, sinking to my knees. He went very still and held one hand in my hair to gently anchor himself. I licked him slowly at first as I learned the shape and the taste of him. My pace increased as I praised him with my tongue. Up and down I worked him, taking direction from his moans and cues, from his hands and my hair. As his breath went ragged, his elegant control began to crack. When I took him deep, he swore softly and said, "I want to come." It was as much an apology as it was need. "Later," I said, "inside me." "Yes," he said, his voice raspy and beautiful. We weren't careful when we finally found the right angle on the divan, but we were careful with each other. He slid into me in one long, necessary stroke. I lifted my hips to take him deeper as he braced and cupped the back of my knee. We found our rhythm, never once shutting our eyes. He told me how good I felt.
Yeah.
I told him how full, how right he was inside of me.
Oh.
A little more of me gave way with each thrust.
Yeah.
All I wanted to do was give him more. Right. "Tell me you're there," he said, breathless. "I'm ready," I said, and I meant it in every way I knew how. His pleasure and mine melted into a single beat of life held together as we held one another. He hid his face in my neck and became very still as he let out a mere whimper of a groan. After we stopped shaking, a soft and incredulous smile fell over his lips. The entire world was just us. In that small room, with painted lotuses on the walls. He found his handkerchief in the pocket of his jacket and did what needed to be done for a lady's delicacy. We grinned at each other as he buttoned his shirt. I affixed my beads back to their rightful place across my neck. "I do have to leave at dawn," he said reluctantly. "The ship at Pier 42. The tide waits for no man." "What if a woman asked it to?" I teased. He smiled. "If you came to the dock and asked the tide to wait, the entire world would believe in the magic that you are. Come with me to Cairo, just for the season. You'd like the way the moon rises on the river, the way the heat gets inside your bones and won't let you contemplate being cold." "You can't possibly know that," I replied. Not because I didn't want to join him. Quite the opposite, in fact. "I know what you did with me in this room," he said. "Two people have never looked at each other the way we did when you told me yes." There were 100 reasons to refuse him lined up like place cards in my head. My aunt, my reputation, my lack of ability to speak more than 3 words of his native language. I said none of them. "Fareed, I..." He touched my cheek with his thumb. "Don't answer now. I'll be at the dock. If you don't come, I'll go it alone. But I'll think of you when the lanterns bump and the gold of the ship wakes. I'll be grateful for what you gave me and what you took. And if I do come, then we'll find out what else wakes when we are together." We opened the doors and the party swallowed us whole, as parties often do. Someone asked me whether a specific curse was real. Someone else proposed a trip to Atlantic City for the following week. I spoke when spoken to and laughed in all the right places, but I held the choice I needed to make in my chest, like a coin I was afraid to spend. Later that night, after all the glitz and glamour had faded, I tried to sleep. When I closed my eyes, I saw a boat slip and a river soft and glittering with evening light. I awoke as the sun began to rise, and I stopped pretending that my decision hadn't already been made. 5 dresses were packed, along with a sensible pair of shoes and my favorite lipstick. I left a note for my aunt, knowing she'd be both proud and a little heartbroken to find it in my absence. "I'll send for the rest. I'm all right. Please don't forget to water the plants. Love, Ava." The cab smelled of leather, and the driver made polite conversation as we made our way downtown. I held my case in my lap, protecting it like it was a living thing. We passed men hosing pavement, women carrying bread, stray cats chasing warmth. The entire drive, my pulse was loud and racing. The docks had ropes thick as the leg of a man. Cranes swung wooden cargo boxes to and fro, and the air was sharp with salt and iron. I saw him almost immediately. He was telling himself a silent story, refusing to skip ahead to a disappointing ending, while he looked toward the horizon that wasn't yet ours. "Stop here," I told the driver, and stepped out before the wheels had fully stopped turning. I set my case down and drew my coat tight, standing where he would see me if he looked. The first thing across his face was almost nothing at all, then a cascade of astonishment, relief, and joy he couldn't hide. He crossed to me in quick strides and stopped just within reach. "Say it," he said quietly, as if the sight of me and the suitcase on my arm wasn't enough of a confirmation. "Yes," I said.
I'm going with you. The skyline broke open in that moment, and the ocean did indeed wait, softly churning with possibility. I looked down at our hands, his knuckles lightly scuffed, my nails painted a rich pomegranate. He took mine into his and interlaced our fingers. Somewhere behind us, there was a parlor full of painted lotuses and empty champagne bottles catching sunlight. We set sail and prepared to catch our own together.